And so my wife and I are standing out in this field, and we're just surrounded by this pack of angry emus. And it's, oh, hey. So we're back. Jeremy Lichtness, Christopher Harrison. No emus were harmed in the making of this story. So we're still talking about web API design. And speaking of angry emus, I mean, if you're going to be looking to set up a security system, angry emus should absolutely be your first line of defense. And that dovetails perfectly, because something tells me you're about to talk about security.
And that would be correct. I am about to talk about security.
Now, before we get to security,
sure,
I am going to throw something at you, because a lot of people have been asking this in the chat window, is why is it that rather than passing back, in fact, here, let me do this question this way. If I go into Visual Studio and I say I want a brand new web API controller and I have it scaffold everything for me using, let's say, Entity Framework, and we do our get, for example, where we're going to return everything, it's going to return back a list of whatever entity it is that we're talking about. And if I go in and I set up the get method inside of there, it's going to return back the individual entity. But yet, in most every demo that you've been doing, you've been returning back IHTTP result. Why? What gives? Why not just simply return back the object?
So it's pretty simple, actually. The key is, what am I assuming? And if I assume everything's going to go fine, I'm going to create a method signature with that object.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you have that signature, that's what you have to return. And
okay.
So there's a few things you can do. For example, if I have an issue, maybe I'll return null. And I can go into the request or the response header and I can set the status code. So that's still available, but I don't have the flexibility I had in the model validation example of returning a different type. So if I am locked into a widget that I'm returning,
right,
that's the only valid thing I can return unless I manipulate the response. If I use IHTTP action result, I can do things like return the model state instead of the object and serialize something different based on how I'm handling that.
Okay, so if I return back the object, but something had gone wrong, I now have to actually open up that response object and start tweaking it manually.
Right.
And it sounds like there are better things to do with your time than trying to tweak that.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think it makes the code just far more readable.
Okay, perfect. I like it. All
okay,
right.
Cool.
So now, security.
Yes, let's talk security. And how do we get those dispatch of emus when someone has an issue authorizing?
I love
so
it.
So this is a big module. We're going to go through a lot of aspects. We've got authentication in the host. We've got a few different ways to approach authentication. And then we've got authorization. So that's it in a nutshell. And I throw in a little bit at the end about a cross-site request forgery, because that is a security concern as well. So don't worry, I will talk about authentication versus authorization.
Mm-hmm.
And without further ado, let's talk about authentication in the host, because that is by far the easiest way to implement authentication in a web API. And what that really means is just configuring your web API project. So when we're talking about authentication and authorization, really simple, authentication is, who are you? What is your identity?
Right.
Am I known to the system or not? And then authorization is, what are you allowed to do? So what are my permissions?
And those are two very different things. The words sound similar. And unfortunately, I hear a lot of people that will use them interchangeably, but they do mean very different things. And when you start getting into web security, the difference between those two makes a very big difference. Very
sure.
Big difference, yeah.
And we're going to tackle both fronts on how do you identify who the user is, and then how do you authorize them to resources. So when we talk about authentication in the host, I call that the default assumption by web API. And usually this involves having MVC or some other app as a wrapper. But this is when you go in to create your template and you've got MVC, and then you've got that nice button that says change authentication.
Yep.
And that pops up a dialog, and we've got really a couple options here. We've got no authentication, so it's wide open.
Wait, that's going to be no authentication.
That's no authentication.
Okay, so it's not just a clever name.
Right, no, not much else to say there. Then we've got individual user accounts. Now, what this assumes is that you're managing these accounts somehow locally. Mm-hmm. Now, it may not mean what it used to 5 years ago, which is through a provider model, et cetera. And if you can see in the text, this is what I have selected. Users can register or sign in using their existing account for, and then we've got different services that can provide it. So that's the concept of individual user accounts, is you can reach out to other providers.
Right.
To authenticate.
And you know, a lot of times people ask, well, why do I want Facebook authentication on my app? And it's always Facebook. Facebook's the one that people always, why do I want Facebook authentication? And there's a couple of different reasons. A big part of it is because it's going to be that much more seamless to your user. The chances are your users are going to have a Facebook account or a Twitter account or a Microsoft account or a Google account. That with those four providers that, and granted, I'm going to make up this stat off the top of my head, like 87% of all other stats are made up on the spot. But I'd be willing to bet that of those four providers, that probably covers 99.9999% of the population that's going to be using your application. And so by allowing them to use a username and password that they already have, you're removing a barrier that, honestly, there's a lot of times where I will look at a site and it will say, all right, well, go ahead and sign up and ask me for a brand new username and a brand new password. And I'll just look at it and I'll just go, I'm just not interested. So you're removing that barrier and you're allowing somebody to log in by using credentials that they already have. The other big reason that I love using like Facebook authentication is because it's less secure data for me to have to worry about. That the easiest way to secure data is don't store it. So when it comes to Facebook, when it comes to Twitter, all that I get is a token. That's it. And if it turns out that my database gets hacked and all of those tokens are released, it's very easy. Is that I just go back to Facebook, I invalidate all those tokens, problem solved. And now I don't have to worry about, you know, exposing out somebody else's password. Now, granted, yes, caveat emptor, if you're using the same password across multiple sites, you know, you're really kind of opening yourself up to that. But even still, I don't want to be the one responsible for exposing out that your password was 12345, which is the same password that I have on my luggage. I don't want to worry about that. I just want to hang on to that token. So if you don't store it, you don't have to worry about securing it. There's my soapbox on Facebook authentication.
That was a great soapbox. I mean,
Thank you.
Exactly why, is because it makes it easier. You talked earlier about make it easy for people to interact with your API.
Yes.
And to grab data. This is one of those ways.
Exactly. Yeah,
so that's
let them use something they already have.
So under individual user accounts, what's great is the pipeline already supports different providers for these third parties. So there's an involved process, which is why I'm not going to demo the full thing because we've got a lot to cover. But you go out and you get certificates and developer tokens and secrets, and you can pass them right into your web API configuration, and then it just knows that it can handle that type of login.
I would mention we actually have a full MVA on identity. I'm actually pulling up the URL right now. I'll paste that into the chat window momentarily. So if you're looking for more information on identity, we've got you covered.
Great. So the next option here is organizational accounts, and you can just basically do a string replace and call that Azure Active Directory, because that's what that really ties into. And Azure Active Directory, it could be an MVA into and of itself, right? So you can do things like synchronize with on-prem, you can create accounts, you can connect to other providers. So there's a lot of flexibility around this. What's beautiful about these templates is if I have an Azure Active Directory set up, when I check that option, I put in the URI to that Azure Active Directory, and all the code necessary to log in is scaffolded for me. Mm-hmm. I don't have to do a thing.
Yep.
So it's great to see. And then finally, we have the traditional Windows authentication, which assumes the person has authenticated with on-premise Active Directory, and so they're carrying around this authenticated context with them.
Yep.
Okay. So having said that, let's look at what authentication in the host is like.
Okay.
Now, this is the one that gets scaffolded for us. So I really just have set up in my source code the basic controller that we saw earlier, except I added an API authentication controller to that. So what does that look like? We'll jump into Internet Explorer. and that's spinning up.
Chugga.
So I created an endpoint called API auth. So I'm going to hit that. And what we see is authenticated false, name empty.
Okay.
Okay, so no authentication going on there. Now I've got this little extension, API auth secured. And when I try to hit that one, boom, it's taken me to a login page.
Okay.
So it completely rejected it and sent me off and said, no soup for you, basically.
Right.
So what I'm going to do is register. And feel free to email me anytime with any questions. I might regret that later, but there it is.
There's your email address.
And I'm going to...
No pulling it back now.
Say my password out loud. No, I'm not. But this is not the password I use anywhere else. And, of course, it doesn't match. Let's try that again. By the way, the built-in authentication has really crazy requirements for your password. Yeah, see, I've got to put that exclamation mark on the end. I normally don't have them as strict, but we'll do that. And let's hope I remember it in the next page, too. Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Cannot insert
duplicate
key.
Yeah, because, well, it worked the first time.
I was like that user that's just like, click, 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 click.
Work!
Right.
Yeah.
So now let's go ahead and log in. If I hadn't done the double click, it would have logged me in automatically, but that's okay. We're going to assume I remember my password and typed it. All right, so now I'm logged in. You can see it's greeting me. That's all part of MVC.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, from the web API perspective, if I go into API auth, now we're going to see is authenticated true and my name is my email. So that looks good. And
okay.
Then that secured one that basically knocked me out and sent me back to the login page, that returns the exact same result.
Okay.
So it's staying with me now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's happy. So what does that look like in code? So I've got my route prefix for my authentication controller. Now this first action doesn't require authentication, but it is looking at the context and seeing, is this identity authenticated and what's the name?
Which is, again, that same code that you could use when you are doing MVC.
Correct.
Yep,
so same concept. Here I've got a secured route. So
okay.
That's that API auth secured. That's how we build mm-hmm. that. Notice I put the authorized attribute.
Okay.
That's all it takes for that host-based security, and actually custom security too, we'll talk about that. But that's all it takes to lock down that method. And what you're saying is that action will not run unless we have an established identity for the individual, and they are authenticated.
Okay.
Okay, and everything else that happened for that authentication actually happened through these account controllers that use sign-in managers and a lot more code than we have time to get into. But the point I'm making is it's sharing authentication with an MVC app.
Yep.
And I can use the exact same attribute. So if I've done authentication and authorization a certain way, I don't have to change that way for my web API. And this is one reason I love standing up Web API for REST,
mm-hmm.
because if I'm using those existing authentication methods, I can put them right in here, and it's just as easy as authorize, and
yep.
we're done. Now, there's more that goes into authorize, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but that'll suffice for this little segment.
Perfect.
Okay, so that's in the host, and that's the plain Jane vanilla format. The next thing we're going to talk about is authentication using message handlers. So this is a case where I want the most fine-grained control. So I'm going from one extreme to the next, which is I have some completely custom method where I'm intercepting the HTTP stream, I'm doing something with it, and I'm spinning up a authentication myself. So that's more fine-grained control. So what happens with these message handlers is they're a part of the pipeline. And it's an interesting part because what happens is you derive from this delegating handler, and then you override a method called send async,
mm-hmm. which
you can see right here. And that is the method that's used to actually send the response back, but now you can tap into it and modify it and do some cool things. So what we're going to do for authentication using these method handlers is we're going to look for credentials, however we expect them. If they're authorized, we need to create an identity. So this identity is key. That's how you authorize the user. Even if you're doing it custom, you need to create an identity. Then we create a principle based on the identity. I'll go into what that is in a second. And then we set the current user for the context. So there's two contexts that exist in the pipeline, and this is important to understand. there is a current user context for the web page, so the HTTP context, and that is what's going to be passed into your authorized attributes and handled by the controllers. There's also a thread principle, and you can set the thread principle too. So if you authorize the user, you set that, but that means all of the code will execute as that user. Sometimes that's exactly what you want. Mm-hmm. There's other times where you may be expecting code to run as the configured service identity for your web server, so you're only authenticating for purposes of locking down controllers, not for purposes of internal calls to the database.
Right.
So that's the nuance there with that difference. So let's jump into a demo for that. Now, this is a fun demo for me because I've got a special authentication that I take credit for. I invented it myself, and I call it naive authentication. And let's take a look at what naive authentication looks like. So we'll come in and we'll hit API auth, and we'll get authenticated false, name empty. We'll go to secured, and authorization's been denied. I can't do anything.
Right.
Okay. So how do I authenticate with my custom method? I'm going to come back over to our friend over here.
And while you're doing this, and just, you know, keep on keeping on there, a lot of people have been asking, you know, how are we going to then allow an app to send up a username and password using REST API and so forth? And again, you're just going to set up the controller, set up the methods, and then just build your jQuery calls, your REST calls, just like you're about to show right here.
Right. And I'm going to actually show it in more detail when I get into token-based.
Yeah. Yeah. So for those of you that are kind of wondering, hey, you know, bring this together, we're getting there. Promise you we're getting there.
Yep. Sure.
Okay.
Okay. So in this one, here's how I authenticate a user. So I'm in my headers, and I'm going to create a header called username with Jeremy.
Okay.
Don't try this in your production systems. I'm going to send that is authenticated true, name Jeremy.
That's it.
So that's my naive authentication. So let's see what that looks like in code.
Although I'm a little disappointed. I wish you would have used Joshua instead.
Let's go into my handler. So I've got a naive authentication handler. Just like I said, I'm deriving from delegating handler.
Yep.
I override this send async. And here's what I'm doing. I'm basically trying to get username out of the header. And if it exists, then I'm creating a identity using the built-in generic identity. Mm-hmm. And you can create custom identities too, so there's a lot of flexibility around it. Passing in who's the user, it's this new user, and then I'm setting the principle to that. So thread and HTTP context. So these are the two ones. This is how internal code will execute.
Okay.
This is how you're configured for the controllers. Mm-hmm. And then I go ahead and pass it through to the base and continue on. So that's it. Now, I could do a lot of custom complex logic here.
So you could use your own custom authentication mechanism that you've built, or you could use the one that ASP.NET provides as well. You could use identity
inside
of there. Okay.
Yeah, so the key here is you might have something encrypted and Base64 encoded in the header. That'd be a little safer. But you can still pull that out, do something with it, create your identities, and then you're good to go. And then if we look at the controllers, this is the beauty of the authentication mechanism. My controllers, and I again apologize for these squigglies, the authorize is still the same attribute that I use.
Okay.
So even though I wired it up custom, I'm still using the built-in, I recognize this code, it's identical to the code that used the host.
I gotcha.
So that's what I love about the system, very unified, very consistent.
Hi, I'm going to stand. Thank you, Danny.
Where is he going? I don't understand.
That's it. I'm out of here.
So that was the other extreme, though, the complete custom. So now what we'll jump into is what I get a lot of requests for, and that is token-based authentication.
That's been there all day, is requests for that.
So you do hang on to your tokens, don't you?
Of course.
So the question is, and there's a lot of ways to do token-based authentication. I'll just caveat with that. There's a lot of third-party services. We talked about the Facebooks, the Googles, the Microsoft accounts that will issue tokens. And then there's a built-in mechanism within Web API as well.
Fantastic.
Concept's simple.
Okay.
Get a token, use the token.
get a token, use the...
Right.
Okay, all right, I gotcha. Yep.
Okay,
so within this, we've basically got this concept of generating a token through our... Authentication technically generates a token, but it has authorization built in. A lot of times tokens come with what we call claims. And if you've ever done that where you've given permission to your app and it says this app would like to tweet on your behalf and post Facebook updates without you knowing and things like that and you opt in, that's the authorized piece. So you're authenticating that you're you and then you're authorizing what it can do. So tokens are given access to resources. And this is really what you talked about earlier. It protects revealing the password to the app.
Right.
So when it's generated by a third party, I never get the password. I just get the token, and
yep.
That's all I'm dealing with. So a controller with support is generated in the template, and that's what I'm going to show you. Tokens pass in the header, and you can create your own provider and parser. So they've got a provider and parser for creating token-based authentication. You can also wire in these third-party providers, but I'm going to show what comes basically out of the box. So we're going to come into our token-based authentication demo, set that as the startup project, after we stop the previous, of course. And Christopher should be happy with this one, because it doesn't start with a forbidden 403 error
page. I'm a little disappointed. I wanted that forbidden. I was kind of digging it.
Yeah. Right. So this one actually has a login. So if I don't log in, by the way, and I click get values, it comes back as unauthorized.
Okay.
And I'm going to pull up our friend Fiddler and just fire off that get values, and then we'll look at some code too. You can see that it makes this call, and it gets a 401. Which is basically no soup for you, right?
Yep.
Emus have been dispatched.
Emus have been dispatched.
What that means.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm going to log in with my email and my super secret password.
If you can remember it.
Which doesn't actually include 123 and an exclamation mark at the end. I'm going to log in.
Sure it doesn't.
And username or password is invalid. Well, in this instance of the website, because it's locally storing identities, I haven't registered yet.
Okay.
So let's register using an API.
Okay. I like it. Kind of do the entire thing. So that way, if I'm building a mobile app, somebody launches my app for the first time, we've got web API behind the scenes, that they're going to need to punch in their username and their password. Let's see how all that comes together.
Right. So I'm going to do it manually here, but then I'm going to show you how we validate through code as well. So I'm going to go to this API documentation, and you can see that what was generated with the template are all these API account, logout, login, et cetera. But we've got a post to API account register.
And this was provided by the Visual Studio template.
By Visual Studio template.
You didn't do this.
So this was scaffolded for me.
Okay, perfect.
Which is a beautiful thing. So we'll go back home, and we're going to take this and come over to our friend. And we'll delete and reset. So this is the API. It was, actually, I should come back to.
I think it was account register.
Yep. I just want to make sure to avoid double typing. So account register. So that's good. So we'll go to account register. It's a post. And then what it's expecting is in the form encoded, it's expecting an email, a password. Now this is in the clear here, but keep in mind when you're implementing this in your own site, it's going to be through a secured sockets layer and managed by your code.
Right.
So you're not actually sending it in the clear.
And along those lines, two things that are worth highlighting here. Number one is that Visual Studio does a great job of generating a self-signed certificate for you. So you can actually go into the web project templates and say, hey, I want you to use SSL. You'll get a real quick error message saying, hey, look, IIS Express is now going to serve you this self-signed certificate. Are you okay with that? You'll just simply say yes. And then the other thing is the filter attribute that you're going to want is require SSL. And that will just globally enable SSL inside your entire project. So you can actually just register that inside of your filters, kind of like we saw in the last module, and that will enable SSL throughout everything. And if I can just sandbox for just 10 seconds here, Enable SSL. F12. Yeah, that when it comes to anything at all that's going to be behind some form of an authentication wall, make sure that you're enabling SSL right from the get-go. Because if I navigate to a page, if it's just sending me a form, I don't know that I navigated to the right page. If it's encrypted with SSL, now I actually know, okay, that's the server that I trust. So right from the get-go, do SSL. But also later on, when you're sending back data to somebody after they've authenticated, make sure that you're sending that in back and forth in SSL. Because if somebody does grab that token, granted it's only for just that session, but if somebody does grab that token, they can then hijack that session. That if you remember back to about, what was it, about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, that some script kiddie created a little sniffer that could actually go out, grab Facebook tokens, and then allow you to take over somebody's Facebook token as they were sitting in a coffee shop. So make sure that you are encrypting SSL. And I'm going to throw a little link into the window here that does a great job of kind of explaining SSL and also the performance hit, or more specifically, lack thereof. Okay, you were talking about something.
Oh, no, that's great. So what I was about to do was send a username and password in the clear.
Yep.
To register for my service. So as you see here in my form, I've got email, password, confirm password. I'm going to click send. And instantly, look at this. Does this look familiar or what? We've got a model state.
Ah, yes.
And I've got my password compliance.
So they did exactly what you did.
They did exactly what I did.
I like it.
And I appreciate them picking a role model for that. So what I'm going to do is add a special character, just an exclamation mark on the end, and send it. And look at that, I got OK, and there's no content, so I'm going to assume that I've registered appropriately. So I'm going to come back to this token-based authentication page. Remember, if I click Get Values, Unauthorized. So I'm going to enter the email that I registered. I'm going to enter the password that I registered.
Your super-duper top-secret password.
Click Login, and ooh, it disappeared.
OK.
And did you see that animation effect, by the way?
Well done, well done.
Thank you. So now I'll click Get Values, and I get Value 1 and Value 2.
Okay.
Okay, so that is token-based authentication, but what actually happened behind the scenes? I'm glad you asked. Let's come into the application. I'm going to stop it from running here. And where a lot of the magic is happening is in this index view. So let's take a look at this index view. So here's where I had my big username, password, login button, et cetera. So what does that look like? Well, the way that the built-in authentication works is you've got a URL that's mapped from Web API that's just /token.
Uh-huh.
You're not going to see a token controller. It's an internal service it provides for token-based authentication.
Okay.
And so you've got all these APIs that allow you to register. Keep in mind, those APIs allow you to add external providers for tokens as well. So I did this example with the local version, but you could add Google, Microsoft account, Facebook, et cetera, and all of those can go into this same mechanism, and you're just changing, are you getting the tokens from the built-in internal web API, or are you getting them from another provider?
Okay.
Okay? And so all I'm doing within my code is I'm doing this AJAX post to token, and then I'm telling it, here's the type of grant that I would like. And a grant is an authentication grant. You're going to grant me access. So I'm going to ask for it using this password, which is this built-in mechanism. I'm going to pass it the username and password that was entered in the form. So that's all I'm doing. I'm grabbing it from the form, sending it to this token. On success, it's going to pass me back what that token is. And if we look at our Fiddler, we can find that called a token, and I'm pulling it up right now. You can see that in the response, I know when it was issued, when it expires, the token type, the username, and then I get this big long token, which is the actual magic secret sauce.
Okay.
So that's what I need to do something with. Well, what do I do with that token once I get it?
What do you do with that token once you get it?
So in this case, I'm just storing it in a global variable. But what happens is, if you remember, when I called API values and I called them before I logged in, I just got an unauthorized.
Okay.
What I'm doing here is, before I send it, I'm setting a request header. And this is a specific type of token-based authentication. Mm-hmm. where you have authorization and then you have bearer and the encrypted token.
Yep.
It's pretty common. So what I'm saying is before you send it, set the request header. Now, before I logged in, that token was empty and my request failed.
Yep.
After I got it, it's now passing that down and then I get this successful result from the data. And if we look at the controller.
Before you open that up, real quick, I just want to highlight on that AJAX call for people that are not familiar, that URL is a little property. You're saying, hey, this is where I want you to go. That before, send, success, and error, those are the three event handlers. So it's going to raise that event before send, give you the ability to set up the header, and then the success and the error is what happens when it comes back with either a success or, of course, an error.
Right. And okay. Actually, if we have some Angular fans in the audience, I'm a huge Angular developer. There's mm-hmm. a similar concept called HTTP interceptors.
Right.
So you can intercept every request. And so that's where you typically do that. You would store the token in Angular. And then before the request, you'd use that interceptor to set the token in the header. So what we'll do is pull up our controllers. And we had a values controller. And what you're going to see is, whoa, check that out. I just still have authorize.
Okay.
So that is what I love about this system. Regardless of how I get to my authentication, I'm managing it through the controllers in the same way. Doesn't matter if it was token, if it was host, if it was custom, I still just need to know one attribute to lock down my controller or my action.
Right, and that's the great advantage. That doesn't care how you authenticate, it's just simply making sure that you have and that you're authorized.
Right.
Perfect.
And this is why, by the way, I have people come to me and say, well, there's alternatives, open source, for standing up APIs that you can stand up REST-based APIs. Do you use those? And I say in most cases, no, because I don't get the built-in security that comes out of the box with these technologies like ASP.NET, MVC, and Web API.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much infrastructure there that makes it easy as a developer to build up the security that I need, that I love those tools. They make my life a lot easier.
I like it.
So speaking of this, we said we had authentication, which is identity, and then we have authorization.
Yep.
So I'm going to talk about authorization filters, and I'm going to attribute it to security. Haha. So authorization filters is based on existing user and roles, but it enables more complex scenarios. So you've got this concept of an iAuthorization filter if you need asynchronous logic, et cetera, but you can basically take that filter and apply it to, again, an action, a controller. You can register it in a global level. But what it does is it allows you to take some existing context and manipulate it. And I'll show you what that looks like in a second. But to actually do something with it, I need to talk about custom authorization filters. Because the one built in we already saw, you put authorize on, mm-hmm. and it's either go or no go. But to do security done your way, you're going to create something custom.
Yep.
Now, what you're going to see is I'm going to take my special patented custom authentication method.
Yep.
And I'm going to implement it with an authorization filter.
Yep.
And someone will say, what's the difference? Well, a message handler is part of the pipeline that you can intercept at any point in time. So there's a lot more you can do with the message handler approach. It doesn't just have to be for authorization or authentication. In the case of authorization filters, these are very specific to authorization and authentication. So they're just more specific with that. So to that note, let's see what a custom filter looks like. So I'm going to set my authorization filter as the startup project. And you can see I've got my API auth and API auth secured, just like before. So we're going to run this. And if we go to, it's Christopher's favorite page, by the way. If we go to API auth,
yay,
we're not authenticated. We've seen this before. If I go to
yep.
secured, we're going to get a security exception.
Okay.
All right. And this formula works actually the exact same way that if I come over to this handy application, post this in, I'm going to set my headers and give it a username of Fred and send that. So now I get is authenticated true name Fred, and if I extend that to secured and I send that, I get the same thing back.
Okay.
So if we look at the controller, we're not going to find much except that we have a filter applied to it now.
Okay.
Okay. Now, again, these filters can be piped in globally. So in the web API configuration, you can add it, and it'll apply worldwide, if you will. But there may be a case where maybe your authentication is different based on a controller or a method. Maybe you have a sort of free open controller that just has a limited user context, and maybe you have a pay gateway that has more complex requirements. So this gives you that flexibility. The filter itself is going to look very similar to the code we saw before. So it looks just like when I did the message handler authentication, except this time I'm doing it off of an authorization filter, and on authorization I get that context, and then I'm doing the same thing I did before, looking in the request headers, setting up a principal and an identity, and then calling down to the base. So again, another approach to doing it that's more specific and allows me to use those built-in attributes.
And so again, inside of there, you can, you know, start taking a look at other things. Like one of the biggest requests that I always get is, hey, how do I make sure that only somebody who created a particular object is allowed to modify it? And so you can do that with your own custom authorize attribute that you could go ahead and inherit. And then inside of there, put in the code, look at the object real quick, look at who the user is, and then figure out, hey, did they create it? And then if not, go ahead and return back either a security error or a 404. Or whatever it is that you might want.
Right, yep. And it's very similar principles to what you've done in MVC.
Exactly.
So it's the same concept, which is great because you get reuse. So once you've authenticated a user, the next step is to go into that authorization. So we've talked a little bit about ways to get there. So now let's talk about role-based authorization, because that's something that comes out of the box and is pretty easy to use. And what it does is handles this idea of groups, if you're in Active Directory, or roles where you can assign an attribute to a user. So authorize does allow you to specify users. So if you really wanted to be that personal, you could create an action on a controller and say, only Christopher can access this action.
I like it.
I would say that that probably won't scale too well. You know, if Christopher moves on for whatever reason, then that action is sort of meaningless. So roles give you a more scalable, generic means of doing that. You can still use your attribute-based lockdown, and it's just an extension to that authorize. You're going to pass some parameters. But the other thing you can do is you can call a method that's provided called isInRole to do a check on that and set up the roles in your logic. So if you have custom authentication, you can still build out roles. I mean, some people, I'm sure that there may be a question about what if I have claims-based authentication. There may be a path where you can map claims into roles if you want to use existing infrastructure that uses roles, or you would just check them a different way. So you've got those types of options. So let's see what role-based authorization looks like. I'm going to set this as my startup after I stop the previous and launch that. And while it's pulling up Christopher's favorite screen in the background.
Do me a favor real quick. Open up the web.config.
For this?
Just because, yeah, for any one of them. Just because there's been a little bit of a question. Scroll down a little bit. So on the, where do I want to be? Oh, that's right. They cleaned this. You know, it used to be that there was an authentication section inside of web.config, but it's not there because on the newer versions, they just sort of assume all of that now. And so it's not in the web.config. So there isn't an authentication. I was trying to open that up real quick. And the moment that you opened it, I went, oh, wait a minute. No, I'm wrong, because they cleaned that and they just made that now sort of default global.
So
there.
If we go back to the token-based authentication project, there is an identity config.
Yeah, and that's where you can register all of that. There we go.
Exactly.
Yep.
And this is actually quite nice because it gives you that flexibility of different types of identities. In fact, if we go here into the startup.auth.
Yeah, you can actually just uncomment what you want. Yeah.
So we've got Microsoft account, Twitter. So it's all built in, and you just provide the keys and the app ID, and you're good to go.
Yep.
Excuse me. So getting back to this API widgets, I'm going to go here. And what we're seeing is two items. We've got an answering machine from 1898, and we've got a camcorder from 1982.
An answering machine from 1898.
Yes, that's when the answering machine was invented, believe it or not.
Are you really?
Now, I don't know if that was actually someone typing on a but I looked this up. Invented year, 1898.
All right.
For the answering machine.
There
pretty,
you go.
Pretty wild. 1982 for the camcorder. So that's the straight widgets. Now, I could try to get a list of all widgets, but I'm not authenticated. I could try to get a list of widgets that I assigned to Microsoft. Those aren't there. In my own company, iVision, those aren't there because I'm not authenticated. Well, the good news is that I plugged in my favorite custom authentication method.
Don't so implement this in production.
So I'm going to go to this API widgets, and in my header, I'm going to give myself a username, jlickness@ivision.com, and I'm going to send that. Now, what you're going to see is, in addition to the answering machine and the camcorder, I've got a personal computer, invented the year I was born, 1974, and I've got the internet, which predated that by 5 years, 1969. So we got a couple more items. If I still had an active VDash account, and I change this to VDashJLickness@Microsoft.com, and I send that, you're going to see now I get a laptop computer from 1983, and the internet still invented in 1969. So you can see I'm actually showing different lists of widgets based on how I'm signed in. And then if I go to iVision's widgets with this context, it's going to deny my authorization. But if I change that back to iVision and send that, then boom, I get personal computer and internet.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final thing is if I change this to all, as Jay Lickness, I'm not authorized. But if I use the super secret username admin, then hypothetically speaking, I would get the full list, which indeed is there.
Okay.
Okay, so we had a bunch of different ways of tackling that list. Let's see the code. Show me the code. All right, so we're going to come back to role-based, and I've got this widgets controller.
Show me the money.
Exactly. So the first thing you'll notice is I've got a widget repo that I'm using that contains the widgets. That's just a hard-coded in-memory database.
Okay.
So nothing too special there. It's just, and it gives me a couple methods, and I can basically pass back if we're locked down to iVision, locked down to Microsoft, it's going to expand the query and determine if they're secured and doing that. So I'm doing that in my code.
Okay, so inside your code, you're actually detecting who's the user and then returning back objects based on that.
And then based on that, if we go back into the controller, so the first thing I have is a get method. It's not even authorized. So that's just going to return anything that's not secured.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that was the two widgets. The next thing we have is this route that's iVision, and we're authorizing iVision or admin to that. So it doesn't matter if I have 100 users or 1,000 who are at iVision.com, they're all going to get access into this.
Mm-hmm.
However, if they're at another group, they're not, another role. Same thing here for this route, it's Microsoft or admin, and then for, excuse me, for the all, we're passing in admin to the roles.
Okay, and so one of the things that's worth highlighting, and I just want to mention this, and this will also give you an opportunity to grab a sip of water there, that you can just simply list off all the different roles that are potentially available. So you've got admin, you've got Microsoft, and again, identity does give you that built-in support for managing roles, and that does include even if the person is using an external account. So if they've registered by using their Facebook account, I can still put them into roles on my system because I still know who they are, so I can still control them there. I do have to say that of all of your list of roles, I am a little disappointed that you left off dinner.
Okay.
See, dinner, role.
Yeah,
see,
I gotcha.
Everybody? Yeah, yeah.
That's actually something good to know for future.
Yeah.
Make the security presentation less dry, dinner role.
Dinner role,
yeah. So
although dinner roles can sometimes be dry.
Yeah. They, yeah. All right.
All right. Anyway, so I'm done now.
Let's jump back into this naive authorization filter, because what happened here is I expanded it just a little bit, and I'm not just getting the username, but now based on where that user's at, I'm adding roles. So we start out and they're just in the user role. If they have a Microsoft.com email, I add the Microsoft role, I add the iVision role. And then when I create my principal, I'm still able to use the built-in objects that I'm provided, this generic principal, but I just pass in the list of roles. And that's what sets it up, and then it's the attributes that lock it down. And so you can see that I have the ability to both keep someone from accessing this action if they're not in a role, but I can also use this is in role to determine if they're actually in that role or not and modify the data list accordingly. So that's authentication and authorization. There's a lot of things that you can do with it custom, but mm-hmm. the last thing I wanted to talk about before we wrap is this cross-site request forgery.
Yeah, this is kind of a big thing where somebody could potentially simulate my form and be sending in a request from somewhere else that I'm not expecting.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's
so that would be a malicious attack, right? And what happens is the attack takes advantage of the fact that you might not be testing where your form post came from. So I stand up a page on my site, I take your information and make it look like we're on a good site, but then under the covers, I might be setting some parameters like delete user or something that you don't want to happen, and then I'm posting it to the site that's the ultimate site we're going to. And that site is just looking for a post, it's not necessarily looking where it's coming from, and that can create issues.
Yep.
So what the prevention of that takes advantage of a few things. There's cookies that are generated, and cookies are secure because they're locked down to the domain, right? So I can't mm-hmm. from another domain access a cookie. But the other thing is that in documents, when I stand up a page, I cannot script the contents of another page. It's not allowed. So in the client, I can't reach out and see that you generated something in the page and mimic that to post down. So what's going to happen is we're going to generate a token on the server and send it to the page. And this is a token that follows an algorithm that we can verify it's our token. We're going to add the token in the header to requests that come down, and then we're going to validate the token on the server. Those are the steps that we use to go through this anti-forgery. So let me show you what that looks like. So I'm going...
While he's bringing this up, one little thing about that anti-forgery token is it does require a shared key across all the servers that you're going to be using. So if you are going to be setting up your own web form, you're then responsible for running around and configuring that. What's great about using Azure, if you don't mind a little Azure plugin here, is the fact that if you just go in and just say, all right, well, I want 2 instances, 3 instances, 4 instances, Azure will take care of all of that automatically for you, and you don't have to worry about it.
That's nice. I am using Azure more and more and more.
Yeah.
And it's
just
making my life easier.
Absolutely, I'm the same way.
So there's great stuff. So if we take a look at this page I made, and again, I take full credit for the design. Thank you. Anti-forgery. So I've got this big red button without token. We can guess where that's going to get us, right? So we click that. And we don't like your counterfeit request.
We don't need no stinking badges.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So if we go to the green and click that, the request was successful. We're happy. There's even an exclamation mark to prove it. And everything's great. So what does that look like in code? Well, remember I said there's 3 steps. Generate the token, include the token, verify the token. So in this index page for token-based authentication, for anti-forgery, we'll go down to views, home, index. So this is all it takes for me to generate the tokens. I basically am creating in my Razor template a variable for a cookie and a form. So these are 2 parts of the token.
Mm-hmm.
And I call anti-forgery get tokens. So that's how I'm generating them on the server. And if you'll notice down here in my JavaScript, I'm creating a tokens variable that takes that cookie and form value with a colon in between.
Okay.
Okay. So step 1, generated on the server. That's how I generated on the server. Step two is going to be, and by the way, notice that instead of hard coding a URL to post down to my forgery controller, I'm using the URL helper to do that. So this HTTP route URL. So that's going to transform it on the client based on where that controller actually lives. So now when I do my request, there's a use token. So I'm wiring up my request. I've got a URL. It's going to be a post. I have a success and an error. But if you're using the token, I'm adding a header. And that is simply an anti-forgery token header with that token I generated on the server. So that's step two, which is include the token in the request. And then the final step on my forgery controller is going to be to validate that.
Okay.
Okay. And what you can see is I've got a post, I've got a return okay. What's going on here is, I feel like there should be like a drum roll or something.
Dun, dun, dun.
API forgery, did I set it in? Or is it just something that happens for magic out of the box? Oh, look
there
at this.
Yep.
It's globally handling tokens for me.
Because, yeah.
So I didn't want to add it to every controller.
Yep.
Right? So let's go to this anti-forgery handler. And we can go to definition, cannot navigate. That's fine.
Oh, because you've got the entire thing selected.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll do it that way. So this anti-forgery handler is a delegating handler. So it's like the message handler in the pipeline. And what I'm doing is grabbing that value out of the header, splitting it up, and then I'm validating with that anti-forgery validate. So the way I've approached this is I've created a global handler that's going to validate every request to make sure it has that anti-forgery token. You could do it just on a per controller result, but this is that third step of extracting those tokens out. And notice I picked this header value, this anti-forgery token. That's what I set on the client.
Right.
Pull it out, I call validate, and that will throw an exception. And so I catch that, and I could be more specific and catch that exception, do something generic, but I'm just saying if it blows up at all, go ahead and forbid it, and then here's my custom, we don't like your counterfeit request.
Perfect.
Okay.
I like it.
And that is anti-forgery tokens, and that is a wrap on security.
Okay, so we saw there how we can actually use a lot of skills that a lot of people probably already have from doing MVC, how we can use our identity. We talked a bit about using external providers, and then eventually rolled that into all the different calls that we can make inside of Web API. Now what we want to do is take one last 10-minute break, and then we'll come on back, close things off, take a look at a couple like little advanced topics, like how to handle model binding and things like that. So we'll go ahead, we'll take 10, we'll see you guys then.
See you then.